welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Eileen Bianchini, who is the chair of the Gospel of Life Society in Norwalk, Connecticut. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eileen.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Now, for many, many years, the pro-life movement was heavily involved in protecting the unborn, giving voice to the voiceless. But it seems like more and more, there's more groups that we're having to defend. Because there's being attack on life from all ends of the spectrum, from human embryonic stem cell research to end-of-life issues. And today you're going to talk to us a little bit about the end-of-life issues and specifically physician-assisted suicide. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So currently, how many states have physician-assisted suicide legally?
At this point in time, we have Oregon and Washington and Montana just became assisted suicide legal. There had been approaches to Connecticut. I understand that the Connecticut Supreme Court was sued, and we need to do something about that to try to make assisted suicide legal in Connecticut. New Hampshire had some difficulty, and they won. The bill to make assisted suicide legal was not passed. But that's not really the end of it. If a bill is not passed, this group and the mentality behind the group is get it the job done however you have
right.
to do it. And if they don't do it by the legal way, passing a bill, they'll go over your head to the Supreme Court and try to accomplish the same goal.
Well, that's exactly how we have abortion nowadays in the 50 states.
And that's how same-sex was passed in Connecticut.
Sure.
So it's dangerous. What's happening is our Constitution and our rights are entirely being ignored. So that's why we need to educate. But on the other side of it, what's also happening is those who promote same things like same-sex and assisted suicide are not beyond distorting the facts. And that's why I'm here today. One of the things I wanted to do, I've been in communication with several lawyers who have been involved in the fight in Washington and Oregon. They lost, and they're warning us now and saying, let's give you some information. And the information I wanted to focus on today was what is the difference between what these groups are telling people about assisted suicide and what it actually is.
So that's important because these groups went into Washington and Oregon and the people actually voted for assisted suicide. And what you're telling us is that what they voted for was not what they got.
Exactly. It's almost like women and what they're being told about abortion. They're not being told they're going to be damaged. They're not being told about the risks.
Right.
And the same with assisted suicide. So one of the persons that I've been speaking with, her name is Marjorie Dorr. She's an attorney. You can look her up on the internet. And she says if you examine the Health Care Act that was actually passed in Washington and Oregon, it hardly matches what people are being told. And they call it death with dignity, but she says the act has no dignity in it. And it has problems, and if someone were to ask her about it, she would say, protect yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so let me go over, because I got this from an attorney and I don't trust my own paraphrasing, I would rather just read some of these things that I got from her, and maybe as we go through we can comment on it. But she said that in a glossy brochure that the patients are given, they're being told that only the patient and no one else may administer the lethal dose. The act itself doesn't say this anywhere. And so the act leaves it open. And as I continue, it gets a whole lot worse. Also, the act contains potentially coercive provisions. For example, she says it allows an heir to a patient who will benefit from the patient's death to help the patient sign up for the lethal dose.
Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's the thing that should concern the people the most.
Right.
You know, because I know a lot of people have the, you know, will say, well, I don't want to be a burden, you know, to my children, or I don't want to be a burden to my loved ones. You know, being sick or dying is not being a burden to anybody. That's, you know, allowing them to minister to you, to, you know, to help you. That's really a gift that you are giving to those people. And by saying, you know, that, well, we need to get rid of our old people or our elderly or our sick, you know, because they're a burden, is really, it's diabolical. I mean, and it's really putting pressure on people to do things that they otherwise would not do.
It's that's true. We have found in studies by the pro-life groups and doctors and medical industry, that is pro-life, like the Catholic Medical Association, that most of the people who would choose assisted suicide are people who are actually depressed.
Mm.
Now, if these people could be cared to or cared by their actual physician, the physician who knew them for many years, they might not be so depressed. Many of them are being separated from their physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Once they go into hospital or hospice, the doctors associated with the hospital, nursing home, or hospice take over, who are strangers to them, don't know them, and they feel that their lifelines are cut.
Right, who wouldn't be depressed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And here they are, some of them, having major difficulties that they never had in their lives, physical difficulties, mental difficulties. And in a lot of cases, their children and relatives are not always there to comfort them. And they start to feel that they're a burden. So not only are their lifelines cut off, but they begin to feel like, well, why continue to live? I feel like I'm a burden.
Mm-hmm.
But if they could be put in touch with their loved ones and cared to by a psychiatrist and then their doctor, that could be fixed.
Right.
All they really need is some attention and love.
Right.
And so that's what the message of the Catholic faith is. The answer to a person who's older or sick or disabled, who has a tendency to feel like, why bother anymore? The answer is not to kill them.
Right, right.
That's not an answer to anything. The answer is to help them, to love them. That's what we human beings here on this earth are supposed to be doing.
Right. And we really need to stress to everybody, you know, that's the equal justice under law, is to treat every person, you know, as you would any other person. And you wouldn't consider, you know, a healthy 25-year-old, look at them and say, you know, maybe you should just kill yourself. You wouldn't.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't even ever encourage them to, no matter what their situation, you know, you wouldn't. And so it's so backwards. And you can see the slippery slope. You know, as soon as you start saying, well, you know, somebody who is terminally ill, rather than have them linger, you know, and be a burden to society and whatever, you know, let them have the option, let them have control over their lives, let them, you know, this quote unquote die with dignity. Well, then how far are you going to go? Are you going to say somebody who is, like you say, clinically depressed and just doesn't feel like living? And it just keeps going on, and especially with these healthcare bills coming down, you know, good way to eliminate a lot of the financial burden is to euthanize people.
Yeah. And the idea of making them feel like they have a choice, actually, once they sign the papers for something like this, they lose their choices.
Wow.
So, and they lose their control. Now, if anybody has dealt with someone who's older, they have very few choices left in life. Maybe they can't drive anymore. They may not have choices about what they eat.
They may have
to be on a particular diet, where they live. So, do you have a choice is very important to them. The opponents play this up.
Mm.
We'll give you choices. But the fact is, they're not giving them choices. Also, they lead them to believe that when they sign for and this is not the lawyer talking now, this is me. But when they sign for a for assisted suicide, that perhaps the last 6 months of their life, if they're terminal, and generally that's when assisted suicide is presented as an option to a patient. If they're terminal, that maybe the last 6 months of their life are could be more peaceful now because this decision has been made and they can use it to reestablish relationships, handle matters that they didn't have the mind to handle before. But the fact of the matter is all that really is robbed from them. They don't necessarily get better care. They may actually get worse care,
right,
because now they signed the paper.
Right. And what if they, you know, like you say, have all this closure and find out, you know what, my life is still worth living.
Yeah. What if they want to change their mind?
Exactly. They've already signed their life away.
Yeah. And doctors have admitted that the ability to diagnose a person with a particular illness with surety is not something that we have at this point in time in our society. And the ability to say that a person will die in 6 months is not something that...
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
So a number of doctors... Patrick Swayze, somebody who was famous, you know, they only gave him a few months to live, and he lived 2 years after that.
Isn't that something?
So, yeah, I mean, so somebody in his situation, though he's, you know, a little more famous, but, you know, somebody in that exact situation could have said, well, I'm just going to take this, you know, I'm not going to let this cancer beat me. I'm going to take it in my own hands, and I'm going to die with dignity.
Right.
And he would have lost a year and a half of precious life.
Yeah. In the autopsies of people who chose assisted suicide, those doctors who are pro-life have found that oftentimes they didn't have a terminal illness at all.
Oof.
Yeah. So it's very dangerous. It's not something to be lightly entered into. And she gives a little bit of information here on how the act works. And she says, the act has an application process to obtain the lethal dose, which includes a written request form with two required witnesses. The act allows one of the witnesses to be the patient's heir. Once the lethal dose is issued by the pharmacy, and that can happen, the lethal dose can happen anytime without the patient's awareness.
Wow.
And she goes into more detail. The death is not required to be witnessed by disinterested persons.
Oh my gosh.
No one
So your heir can kill you for your money, basically.
Right. And no one is required to be present, actually.
Wow.
This allows
How is that dignified?
I know. This allows the heir to be a witness on the lethal dose request form. This does not promote the patient choice. This invites coercion. As far as the physician involvement under the act is concerned, under the act, the attending physician and consulting physician are required to determine whether the patient is competent at the time of the legal dose. The act does not require that the patient be competent or even aware when the dose is administered.
Oh, so they want you to force you to make the choice while you're still lucid. And then you can just take a nap and not come out.
There is no language requiring the client's consent at the time of administration.
Wow.
So somebody's going to give me a lethal dose, and I, at that moment, don't have to be aware or even consent.
So you can see this whole thing working with Alzheimer's patients. You know, I mean, people who are perfectly physically healthy, but they saw the signs of Alzheimer's coming on, and they're convinced that they don't want to be a burden to their family. And when I don't recognize you anymore, just pull the plug.
And that's often misdiagnosed too,
right?
Because there's so many forms of dementia, and there are some forms of dementia that actually mirror some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's. So they could wrongly assume, doctors don't know, they can't prove that a person has Alzheimer's. There are other diseases that they're not conclusive decisions like Parkinson's disease. And so, that would be very, very dangerous for people to go with decisions like that. The issue of self-administer The brochures do say that you can self-administer the lethal dose. Let me explain to you what self-administer means. This is hard to believe. It does not necessarily mean that a patient administers the lethal dose to himself or to herself.
Like one would think.
As it suggests, the act does not state that only the patient may administer the lethal dose. The act instead provides that the patient self-administer the dose. In the term self-administer, they explain it to be that self-administer is defined as the act of ingesting. So obviously, only the patient can ingest the lethal dose.
So when you're feeding your baby baby food, the baby's self-administering.
Right,
because
when they're ingesting, unless they throw it up. Self-administer means a qualified patient's act of ingesting medication to end his or her life. In other words, someone else putting the lethal dose in the patient's mouth qualifies as self-administration. They play with words. We've got to be careful of this. Just the way they call it, death with dignity. When actually, as she points it out over here, when you're intentionally killing an incompetent person or intentionally killing some other person without his consent is homicide. It's not death with dignity. It's homicide. But the act gives protections to those who implement it. And that's the insidious part of it. Even if a loved one or someone in the family were to complain or suspect that something is amiss, the act gives it those who are trying to perpetrate this protections.
You can just smell it. Is there any evidence that doctors in Washington and Oregon are running away from this? I mean, are they finding doctors who are willing to assist patients in this?
The doctors are more readily willing to assist patients with this, and the doctors are of the mind that they're actually giving the patients a choice, and that the patients are they're eliminating their suffering.
Now, is this like deja vu? I mean, it sounds exactly like abortion.
It does, doesn't it?
It sounds exactly like abortion.
Yeah,
and it's a choice.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that even the doctors are not well taught how to use pain medicine.
Location.
And that. Some are under the belief that if a person is suffering and they have a lot of pain, that if you provide that person with a large enough dose of drugs, that it could cause heart failure and kill the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it can. But that's not the proper way of administering. Mm-hmm. What they have to do or should be doing is starting with a small dose and very gradually working up. And what I understand is that if you do that, the body adjusts and becomes able to deal with larger and larger doses,
mm-hmm.
such that you can work up to a dose that will actually
alleviate the pain without
again,
causing the respiratory depression and heart failure.
Exactly. And if they're thinking of using pain as an excuse to kill a person, right, there is no longer that excuse.
Right.
It does take time, and the patient will have to. So they should be wisely starting it earlier in the cycle of the disease,
mm-hmm.
or the situation, not waiting till last minute and
right.
say,
can't
oh, we can't
it.
Do this. The
right.
only thing you can do is assisted suicide. And by the way, here's the pill.
Yeah.
And what they pointed out, too, is that, and I don't think Margaret does here, but in a number of other articles, is that oftentimes the decision to give a pill is when the expenses increase too much. And so they want to push the patient in that particular direction, like when the cost of treatment is too high or when the cost of taking care of the person becomes excessive, then the doctors and the nurses may begin to suggest to the patient that, you know, are you feeling like you're a burden?
And
push them in a direction.
This is kind of like reminiscent of our discussions on the death panels, you know, the so-called death panels that the healthcare bill seemed to provide, you know,
yes.
That there would be a disinterested, bureaucratic group that would, you know, have the doctors sit down with the patient and discuss their, you know, end of life options, you know, and that's exactly what we were afraid of, that, you know, to skirt costs, you know, cut costs, you know, they start, talking patients into killing themselves. So you can see them setting up the field. We need assisted suicide because we're going to have all of these people in healthcare and it's going to be too costly and we need, you know.
And there is a document called the Living Will, which is very dangerous. We're asking all our people in the Gospel of the Life Society to replace the Living Will with the Loving Will by the American Life League. And several other organizations have their own variations. But the Living Will pretty much gives a hospital or hospice permission to, for minor reasons, not give you food and water. One of the minor reasons might be that for some reason you're not able to ask for it. So they could just forget to get or neglect
to give it to you.
Yeah, right. Like people are coming out of a stroke. Oftentimes they're not ready to, not cognizant enough to know to ask to eat, or they may not feel like they want to eat, but we should feed them.
Right.
And but they may opt to just let them go.
My mom's in her 70s, and you know, every time she goes to the the emergency room, you know, she gets the same question: "Do you have a living will? Do you have a living will?" And it's like, it's scary, you know, how fast they jump on these things. It's like, okay, am I not coming out of here? You know, it's really. They're so pushy, and they just.
And if you have already signed a living will with a hospital, it probably would be a wise thing to retrieve it, to go get it, and replace it in that hospital with another type of will. A conclusion to say is to be very careful. I would say, if you have a loved one who's talking assisted suicide, get them some help. Their own doctor that they're used to talking to, or a psychiatrist or psychologist.
Or a priest.
And treat the mental problem rather than letting things take their course, which is, unfortunately, people are busy and this is what we tend to do. I wanted to read to you what happened with, his name is Dr. Charles Bentz, and he's a clinical associate professor of medicine, the Division of General Medicine and Geriatrics at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland. And he said, I am an internal medicine doctor practicing where assisted suicide is now legal. I would like to share a story about one of my patients. I was caring for a 76-year-old man who came in with a sore on his arm. The sore was ultimately diagnosed as malignant melanoma, and I referred him to two cancer specialists for evaluation and therapy. I had known the patient and his wife over a decade. He was an avid hiker, popular hobby here in Oregon. As he went through his therapy, he became less able to do this activity and became depressed. And that's common when people are prevented from pursuing
the
activities.
Things that they love,
Right, exactly. Which was documented on his chart. During this time, my patient expressed a wish for a doctor-assisted suicide to one of the cancer specialists. Rather than ask me, the doctor, to talk to him as his primary care physician and someone who knew him and cared about him, the specialist called me and just simply said, "The second opinion is needed for his suicide." And she told me that barbiturate overdoses work very well for patients like this, and she had done this many times before. I told her that assisted suicide was not appropriate for this patient, and I did not concur. I was very concerned about my patient's mental state.
So there's your second opinion. Your second opinion said,
I don't concur. Right. And I told her that addressing his underlying issues would be better than simply
sure.
giving him a lethal prescription. Unfortunately, my concern was ignored. And approximately 2 weeks later, my patient was dead. The public record is not accurate. This is another thing that Margaret Dorr pointed out. The public record, when a patient dies from a barbiturate overdose or a lethal assisted suicide drug, they don't say that that's what they died from. They say on the records that they died from whatever
disease they supposedly had,
like the cancer or the diabetes or high blood pressure.
That's the same thing. If a woman dies of an abortion, she doesn't die from the abortion. She died from the
bleeding. Right.
Or the hemorrhaging. Abortion caused. Yeah.
Right.
Excessive hemorrhaging. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or an infection or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He says, this experience has affected my practice and my understanding of what it means to be a physician. What happened to this patient who was weak and vulnerable raises several important questions that I had to answer and that citizens should also consider. If assisted suicide is made legal, will you ever be able to trust your doctors, insurers, HMOs to give you and your family the best care?
That's true. You know, we figure if it's legal, just like abortion, because abortion is legal, everyone figures you should just have an abortion. Don't complain about not having enough money to raise a baby. Just have an abortion. Don't complain that, you know, you're depressed or whatever. Just kill yourself. You know,
we're
not going to worry about, you know, the people who want to live.
Right.
This is really, really, really scary.
He says, I referred my patient to specialty care, to a doctor I trusted. Mind you, the doctor who forced this patient to commit suicide was not a strange doctor. It was a doctor that he trusted. And the outcome turned out to be fatal. And then he also questions, he says to you something like we were saying before, how will financial issues affect your choices,
mm-hmm.
or the choices of the hospice, or the choices of
the government.
Hospital,
yeah.
or the government? You have to be aware of this. Let's not be vulnerable ourselves or victims. Let's be wise and prudent.
Yeah, and I hope people understand this and make sure that in Connecticut we try to hold off the stem the tide so that we don't have assisted suicide here in Connecticut. Thank you so much for joining us and bringing us this important
welcome information.
Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that you talk to your family and friends about the things that you've learned. And when you look in the mirror the next time, we hope you realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.